Okay, we're going to talk about academic liaison. We have Hua Xin somewhere there, India, participating from China. Hello, Hua Xin.
Hi.
And Anne Gichin is going to tee off.
Okay, so we're going to look at agenda paper 6, and I sent you an email. I'm sorry, it was a bit late, sort of late last week, letting you know that I'd be asking you about what your organizations do in terms of academic liaison. So we're trying to develop a more structured approach to academic liaison. We have a sort of set of activities that's built up over the years, but it's built up on a relatively ad hoc basis. And we now have two new board members with academic backgrounds joining Cheng Wu, so it seemed like a good time to think about what we're doing in a more structured and cohesive way. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to start by asking you what you do to liaise with academics. What works well for you, and do you think the things that you do would work well in our context, in a sort of broader international context? So, input, please.
If I could just add, what you see in the paper, we did try to think separately about academic liaison as in the research side. And then, of course, there is another side where we're liaising with academics over education and training and things like that. And you can see in the paper that we tried to put that into two pathways, if you will, just to help us with our process.
Linda?
So what do we do today? And are we doing enough? Probably not. So today, one of the things we have is our own academic advisory council. And we've had that for quite a number of years. And we seek feedback from them. In particular, they're interested in things that involve research that you may be doing. Very much interested in things like the conceptual framework. So we find it relatively easy to gather them together for things like that. We find it relatively hard for them to take an interest in perhaps what you might consider the more routine standard-setting projects. So that is something that we're trying to learn from and work with. And the other thing that we're trying to improve upon is how better to integrate their advice into the research program that we're developing. And as you know, often there's an issue in terms of what the standard setter wants and needs from a research perspective, and the subject matter and the timing that academics are interested in doing that research in. So we continue to work with that. But our academic advisory council, as I say, has been in place for a number of years, and we don't have any trouble getting membership for the committee, and people are interested in it. We also routinely attend certain conferences. So there's the American Accounting Association, the Canadian Academic Accounting Association, and the Contemporary Accounting Research Conference every year. We attend that and we liaise with academics at those. I also personally attend the FASB's Financial Reporting Issues Conference, and we'll do so again this year with our new academic member of the board. Thanks for the invitation, Christine. And also, Patrick has been very nice about including me in their research forum, so I'll be speaking at that again on Monday. The other way we get involved is we are asked to come to schools and have discussions with the students, often at the PhD level, in terms of what's happening in standard setting, how standard setting works, whether or not they would like to be engaged in standard setting in some way, shape, or form. And then I personally serve on the advisory board for one of the major Canadian institutions in terms of their curriculum. So we have a number of touch points into the academic world. Our feeling is that we need to do a better job of kind of grabbing hold of those different touch points and getting, in essence, more bang for our time, and how we leverage those opportunities and engage academics in our work. So yes, there's stuff going on, but we're not sure that we're really getting our benefit out of it, and want to find better ways to do that.
Lee?
Okay, I'm going to speak on behalf of China, and maybe later on, Patin will add something more on behalf of the AOSSG. And based on our experience, it's of vital importance that the research projects academics looks into are in line with their accounting standard setting activities. So it may be a good idea to post on the website of the ISB a list of the research areas or topics that the ISB is interested in. And we also noticed that there are a large number of activities the ISB want to take. And considering the resources at hand, it may be practical to prioritize some of the activities for the time being.
Patrick.
Accounting research in France is one of the three missions of ANC. It's one of our key priorities. We believe that research is essential in accounting because, to a certain extent, the status of accounting research is not what it should be to a certain extent. So it has to be improved. So we try to build up the network, the academic network. We sponsor policy papers. We sponsor also medium-term projects. We participate in conferences. We organize the annual symposium, the annual ANC symposium, which is held in December every year, next Monday. Sorry to say it again. it is the seventh time that we organize it, and we have probably 250 people in the room and as many people via a webinar. So we consider it's a reason for a research accounting research event. It is reasonable. And we, of course, enhance communication on research projects. We have a dedicated fund. In fact, we have a dedicated fund to contribute to ASB, to contribute to EFRAG, and the rest of it is going to accounting research. So it's a fund that is raising money on listed companies. It's a voluntary contribution. And we make very clear to the people who contribute, in fact, the vast majority of significant listed companies, that we use part of the proceeds to finance our research projects. Currently, we have 18 active projects, because it takes normally approximately 2 years for a project to go to till the end, involving 30 academics, which revolve these projects revolve around things like European public good, performance, impairment, discount rates, pollution mechanisms, distinction between all the topics, debt and equity, intangible assets, the equity method, the impact of digitalization. So, to tell you the truth, it's not always 100% use. It's not always easy to use the outcome of the research projects, but nevertheless, it is most of them can be used in the context of what we discuss here and what we do in France or at European level. We have selected 8 projects in 2017, and we have 2 more on which we are selecting. The topic will be of interest to you, the last 2, level of aggregation in insurance business, and from environmental reporting to standard setting. The accounting challenges of climate risks and opportunities. Okay, the symposium quickly, not to tell you again that it's next Monday, but
I'm just going to bleep them out of the tape.
But the content, we are going to concentrate on revisiting the topics of the previous 2 years. So the conceptual framework on one side and the performance, the measurement of performance on the other side. And then we concentrate on digitalization from two angles. One angle is the impact of digitalization on information as we know it. And the other, which is the digital economy creating new transactions that we don't know how to account for? And it's finalized with a roundtable, which revolves normally around the European public good. Hans was with us last year. This year we will have the director general of FISMA. And so it's a good opportunity for the academics to see that they are not only operating, first of all, in an educational capacity, but also in a research capacity, and that they contribute to what is going to end up being applied by businesses. We conclude the day by an accounting community dinner where we give some awards to academics. Christine?
Thank you. So before I share some of the things that we've been doing at the FASB, and I'm going to focus on a couple of new initiatives, I just had some feedback on some of the activities that were described in the document that you shared that I thought might be helpful. So first of all, with respect to item number 8, which is the creation of an academic advisory group, we have an academic advisory group that's been operating for a couple of years. And there are different models that I think you can consider for that. One model that I'm hoping that we might move to is one where you have a core group of people that are on the, as we call it, the ARG, the Academic Resource Group. But one of their responsibilities is based on whatever the topic is that we want to discuss with that group, that they identify an expert outside of their group that's an academic that they would recommend that we bring to the board. That gives more breadth of interaction, and I know this will come as a shock to everybody at this table, but academics can be somewhat narrow-minded in their perspective of something. So getting, you know, a group... hey, I can say it. But I think that helps to bring a variety of perspectives, which is helpful. Another additional resource that you might consider on top of the academic advisory group is the American Accounting Association has 8,000 members, and 2,000 of those are international members. So that's a large population, and many of those members, both within the United States but also internationally, are involved in the international accounting section. The current vice president of practice of that section is Paul Munter, who I think you're familiar with. They probably have, it looked to me like they do have, a group that is charged with interacting with standard setters. So I think if you were to reach out to them, they would be another, and maybe you already have, but they would be another place to go to have a group of academics to correspond with. Then on item number 9, the framework-based teaching, I read your description there with a lot of interest because the American Accounting Association had its own efforts that were very similar to these and unfortunately with very similar outcomes. So I didn't have a lot of advice to give you there except to say that you're not alone in the struggles and in the efforts that you've been making in that. Yeah, sometimes misery loves company, if nothing else. Then on item number 13, the curated academic resources. With that one, I noticed that you expressed some concern about the significant hours that would need to be invested. One way of potentially offsetting that cost, or maybe not offsetting it, but if you do decide to make that investment, getting even more bang for your buck, given that you've made that investment, would be through the AAA's Center for Advancing Accounting Education, and I can give you the name of the director of that. They had at one point plans to do a curated resource of materials for academics through their website. So at the very least, they could give a link to whatever you do so that you get another way of advertising that. But they might also be a resource that could provide some actual work effort to help defray your costs. So that might be something to take a look at. Okay, and then last but not least, it struck me as I was looking at your materials that, and this is good advice for us as well, because I hadn't really thought about this before, but in trying to figure out, if, as you've got all of these different activities, trying to get the maximum benefit for the amount of effort that you're doing, coming up with measures to do some outcome assessment, and then starting to actually measure these things and then try to figure out which ones are providing you the kinds of outcomes that you would like to see. I think that's something that we need to start doing as well, and we haven't done that yet. Okay, so two new activities that we've got at the FASB. One is a landing page specifically for academics, and I think you already have something like that. In fact, it was looking at yours that we were able to get some ideas for ours, so thank you very much. And one of the items that we put in there that has gotten some good traction for being something new is a link that academics can click on and submit a paper, and it goes to one staff person in the organization and myself, and then we make sure that the paper gets to the team and it gets put within the project files so that anybody going back and looking at that project can get access to that academic research, and then we just acknowledge the and thank them for sending their work.
Do you get many papers?
So we just started it in July, and we've already gotten three or four submitted through that link, and I've been pleased with that because it's hard to get the word out that it's there. But it came about because Russ Golden was sitting beside an academic at a conference, and they got talking about a paper, and he thought it was really interesting, and he said, "Well, why didn't you send it to us?" And the individual kind of hemmed and hawed, and then he came and asked me the question, and I said, "Well, how would they know who to send it to?" And he was like, "Huh, okay." So we decided that we would incorporate that, and it does seem
interesting. Can I ask you what you're doing about quality control? Is the filter, because it comes to you and you read it and you work out whether it goes to the project team? Or?
So I have not taken on the quality control aspect of that. I'm hoping our next thing that we're doing will help with that, because right now we don't have anybody on staff with an academic background that can go through and read all of those papers and assess them. So right now they're just going through and we're letting the staff take a look at them, and then if they have questions, they go to the ARG, to our academic resource group, or they come to me. But I do worry about that issue. It's a really...
And do you limit it to published papers?
Right now, we're anything that comes in, we'll take a look at it. If we decide, that it's not helpful, we'll shove it to the side. But basically, if it comes, it will get filtered off to the project team, and they can take a look at it. In terms of on-staff resources, we have not had continuous success in having an academic fellow come and visit the board and stay for a year or so. Under the model where we were looking for someone who was more senior. So we've decided to experiment with a program that's a postdoc program. We just advertised it for the first time this year. And the set of new PhDs that are coming out onto the market in any given year is probably about 120 a year in North America. We have a conference where they interview with potential schools. So we use that as a mechanism to advertise our postdoc program. We have 35 candidates that have indicated an interest in that program. I don't know how many will actually result in people that would seriously consider taking advantage of the position, but I'm encouraged by the amount of interest that we've gotten, and it seems quite genuine interest in that position. One of the reasons why I think that, and I'm hopeful that this will be successful, is that by interacting with an academic early in their career, I think we have a much better chance of, in the long term, impacting the trajectory of the type of research that they do and what they bring to the classroom in terms of their understanding of standard setting. And planting those seeds, if we can plant one of those seeds every year for a period of time, then hopefully it will build to something significant. So the trade-off that we have is that we're bringing someone in who has cutting-edge research skills because they're fresh out of their PhD program. They have cutting-edge knowledge of the research that's being done, but they have less academic experience, and so that's the trade-off that we make with them.
What do you get them to do while they're with you?
Yeah, so they will be providing some of the quality control, looking at papers as they come out, liaisoning with the academic community, helping to run the Financial Reporting Issues Conference, writing literature reviews for the staff. There will be some projects that they will actually be assigned to, but then they will also be a resource for any staff member to come from any of the projects if they have questions about research that they're reading. And the carrot that we're holding out to the candidates is that they will get access to XBRL data. They'll get training in how to use XBRL, because academics love data. They like that aspect. And we are also paying a salary that is competitive to what they could earn if they went to their first academic position, which makes it attractive. I think the other thing that's working in our favor is right now there's a bit of a demand and supply imbalance in our favor of the number of PhDs that are coming out with an interest in financial accounting and the number of positions that are available. So that means that there will be folks that won't get jobs, not because they're not good people, but just because there's more jobs than there are people. So I think, I'm hoping that they will look at the opportunity to come to the board for a year as something that will be advancing their career while they're still seeking their final positions.
Okay, thank you. Oh, sorry.
No, that was it. I'm done. Thank you.
Well, Singh, did you want to contribute?
Yes, thank you, Hans. The Secretary of the AOSSG, we received several comments from our AOSSG members. Generally, they supported the ISB to set up academic liaison mechanism and agree with these draft objectives in the agenda paper. With regard to how to establish the academic liaison mechanism, our member, they have some comments. One is, we would like to ISB to clarify the direction of the research on the IFRS. That is, just to tell the academics what kind of research is needed by the ISB. Mm-hmm. And we find the research center website or the newsletter is very helpful. If we could periodically update a list of research topics or areas, that will be helpful for the academics to focus on specific areas or specific topics. And also, another comment is we would like to put priority on the different projects, because sometimes our ISB will be facing the resources limitation. So during hold on the conference, I think maybe we need to focus on first on those major projects. And besides the academic conferences, one member of ALSSG, they mentioned the teaching workshops may be very, very critical for some jurisdictions. Because in Asia and Oceania, we have the AO office located in Tokyo. Maybe AO office could take more responsibility to organize this kind of teaching workshops for some jurisdictions in Asia and Oceania. And yeah, the third comment is about academic advisory group. We totally agree with to set up this kind of advisory group, because from our China's experience, we have 23 members from different universities and three national accounting institutions located in Shanghai, Beijing, and Xiamen. They are full of experience in teaching of the IFRS or maybe the local accounting standards. So we find they do a lot of contribution to the development of the accounting standard sector. So in the future, if our ISB set up this kind of advisory group, that will be very helpful. And the fourth, because our one ALSSG member find our IFRS textbook is very critical to help the students understand the current IFRS. So maybe we can use the current IFRS textbooks in the market to help these jurisdictions enhance their understanding of IFRS. In China, when our stakeholders, they know the ISB is doing some this kind of activities, they feel very excited. Besides that, they put up several concerns. For example, how to engage more in the activities. For example, they would like to engage in more activities such as our education fellow. They mentioned is there any possibility for them to seconded in ISB for short term.
Do you want me to respond? I mean, we are considering the possibility of having an academic fellow on secondment and what role they would take. We haven't got we haven't developed a plan. It's part of our developing our strategy, exactly what that would be and what that would look like. But if we did do that, then, you know, anyone appropriate could apply. Matt, do you want to add anything about
it? No, I think that covers it at this stage.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Arsene. Chris?
So we've got a number of initiatives that we've been trying to do with academics. So the first thing is we've just employed another research director. Very much ours. who's part-time, and that's being set up deliberately so that they will maintain relationships in with the academic community, but then hopefully provide a nice bridge across to accounting standard setting. And as part of that, we do have a research strategy, which now it's a requirement for all of our key projects that everybody has to do a literature review at the start of the project to actually understand what research there actually is. We haven't quite got there yet, but the idea is that those literature reviews are actually published. So again, it helps the academics with their impact, and they can actually say we've had something that the AASB's had on its website, at least to say it's out there. We've also set up an academic panel, so it's designed to go two ways, so that we can go out and use that panel to identify research that might be useful for us, but also pass on the research that we would like academics to do on our behalf. And again, we have had a couple of research papers that we've done with academics that we've co-branded with them and said they were the authors to try and give them the impact that they wanted. It hasn't worked particularly well in terms of getting research coming back to us, because what we've been encouraging people to do is come and talk to us before they start the research, and so that we could say, well, you know, if you ask these extra couple of questions, that would be particularly helpful to us and not necessarily going to impact your independence. I think there's going to be a little bit of a change for that, because I think people are now seeing that we are more interested. We also provide a forum for people to present at the board. So we've had quite a number of the authors come along and actually present their papers to the board. So again, they get that kudos that they've done that. And then they also get the write-up that we say that that's happened. We have a research forum, so thank you very much to France. We copied very well. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. That's actually worked particularly well, because what that does, the way we do it, is we bring together the panelists, and so then the academics can actually see how things work in practice. So what I'm trying to encourage them to do is be more provocative and more out there in terms of what their recommendations are. So they tend to want to be very conservative and not really tell us anything that you would then say was particularly useful, but hopeful that going forward that will start to get a bit better. A couple of other things that we do as well, we do an intern program. So we take people once they've done honours or a PhD, depending on where they're at, and so they come in for a year. We get them to work on lots of different things, and so far that's actually worked really well. So then they go on and they actually often get jobs, not just back in academia, but also into larger firms, and so that's actually seen as a career-enhancing move.
So are they just like working on technical projects as the technical staff rather than sort of academic focused?
Can be a bit of both. It just depends what particular projects we've got at the time. But the key for them is that they actually get to present to the board, so they have a lot of communication opportunities and they have a lot of networking opportunities. So it's actually seen as something quite positive for them. In terms of whichever way they decide to go when they finish. The other thing that we've been asked to do is to help sponsor research grants. So we haven't so far had to contribute any funds, but we've just actually had to suggest that we would be interested in the outcome of the research. That's actually, I think once that gets out and about a bit more, we're going to get a lot more queries through the academic panel as to whether we can do that for them. We also do a fair bit of presenting and actually going around to the different universities and just trying to tell people what it is that we do and how we do it, so that they're more interested in talking to us. That has been helpful. So there's an AFANS session, which is an Australian-New Zealand collection of academics. Did I get that right? Yes. So we use that as an opportunity. There's sessions there and we do try and promote that we're interested in talking to academics and genuinely want to make sure that they get a chance to demonstrate impact, because that seems to be the buzzword now in that industry. But the thing for me that's actually been quite pleasing is that I can see now that there's a lot more academics coming along to our outreach events. So when I first started, there was basically no academics coming to any of the sessions that we were running, and now we would routinely get at least two or three who would be coming along and actually contributing their views and their research, which I think is more just we've got a weekly newsletter, and I think that because of us going and talking at the different universities, they know about the newsletter, they've signed up, and so they know that those events are actually happening. So is it perfect? No, but it's certainly a lot better than when I first started.
Thank you, Hans. We have a representative from academia on our board, as well as technical committees. These representatives are very incremental in identifying flaws in the logic we use in our standards. The challenges we face working with academics are twofold. The first is that the work of academics provided under certain conditions, and that it's difficult to directly use the work in the standard setting process. One thing we learned is that it's important for standard setters to understand the benefits and limitations of the work performed by the academics. The second is that academics work in the different time frame compared to the standard setters. For example, we prepare papers for meetings in a few months, but academics generally ask for more than a half a year to prepare. Thank you.
Finally, we found a group that is slower. Andrew?
Thank you. Yes, I was just jotting down perceptions of challenges of working with the academic community, and also noted accessibility of papers to non-academics as one of them, timelines as another. And I think a third challenge, we can ask what academics can do for us, but we need to also ask what we can do for academics to make it into a win-win situation, and that's something I think we're still learning. We found that academics clearly value any initiative which would help get papers published. You can also pay them, of course. That seems to help. I think that's come up already. but access to public policy makers or influences over public policy makers also seems to be something of a KPI, an ability to demonstrate that their work is making a difference to real world outcomes. Seems to be a growing KPI within the academic community. So if you can offer all of that, then or some combination, there's more of a chance to make it into a win-win. But we've been working with academics in some ways for quite a long time, but this year we've tried to give a lot of additional impetus to that. You're mainly motivated by, for a long time, I've been saying we are committed to being more evidence-based, and we've asked you to be more evidence-based, and we have found that academic input can certainly help us be better at gathering our own evidence and better at accessing and understanding, utilising the evidence and studies that are already out there. We set up an academic panel, and you were there, so you can form your own views as to what worked. One of my reflections is normally when we have a working group meeting, a board meeting, or an outreach event, people tell you what they think about a particular possible accounting development. They like it or not, or like something else. Without overgeneralizing, I found with the academic panel on the basis of one meeting, they're less inclined to say whether they prefer this accounting outcome or another, more inclined to say what additional research you might conduct or to help better understand the problem. So that's useful in its own right, but it's a different sort of input that creates different challenges for those taking that input on board. Thus far, the academic panel has mainly responded to papers written by the Secretariat that are relevant to projects within our portfolio, so it's not the same model as commissioning academic papers and then bringing other academics to discuss them, but we're going to reflect on what works and what doesn't work and what's most relevant. We've also, I won't go through our full inventory of initiatives, but we have just in the last month or so brought on our first EFRAG academic fellow, so it's early days. Again, she's a sort of floating resource across our various projects, mainly in helping people with the evidence gathering process, but in a very practical way, how to best design a questionnaire and make the questions properly balanced and neutral, for example, or get the right sample to reduce the risk of selection bias, that kind of thing. So like I say, it's early days, but I'd say so far so good, and encourage the ISB to look at that kind of thing. And we have just commissioned our second academic study. The first one was on professional use of, or use of financial information by professional investors. This one's on discount rates. So we'll see what that yields. But we have found when we commission our own academic study, you can sort of specify the, not what you want them to say, but how you want them to say it in order to address the accessibility issue, if I can put it that way. So, but I think your plan all looks very sensible. It looks quite ambitious, but you'll no doubt prioritise.
Yes.
Thank you. About academic liaison, we have, first of all, we have a good liaison with the Italian Association of Academics. They actively participate to our standard setting process, even on local GAAP and IFRS. Obviously, we have also academics in our board meeting. Currently, I count five board members with academic background, some of them with, you know, different backgrounds, but one of these is academic. About research, we currently we follow actively the closely the activities on research from academics. We have a staff member who's dedicated to research, which is somebody else you were mentioning before. We also think that research is very important, as what Andrew said before, on having evidence-based accounting. So we think it's very important to push research in terms of giving evidence of what the impacts of a new accounting standards are. And I wrote a paper on impact assessment of IFRS 16, for example, in Europe before the issuance of IFRS 16. And I think that we should really also use academic panel, for example, in EFRAG, also for having these inputs for our processes of standard settings. We have no academic panel. We are very supportive of EFRAG academic panel, so there are Italian members participating there. We have members of, we have academics, we prefer to have academics in working groups, like you. We have a working group in IFRS, working group in National GAPS, and they actively participate to that. I think this is the summary of our involvement with IFRS.
Thank you. Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Well, I guess we are really an outlier. So at the moment, we don't have any involvement with academics, and perhaps based on our objective and mandate, it's probably debatable whether or not we are meant to. So it certainly hasn't been anything which has come up onto our agenda. I guess it's more our Institute of Chartered Accountants that actually focuses more with academics rather than us as the standard setter.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's some good advice then.
Yes.
Certainly. It's been very useful. Thank you very much.
I've got one question, which is, I mean, so many of you have got academic liaison groups of some sort. I've often wondered how easy it would be to make a group that like that work here, because, I mean, I've been to meetings of the FRC, the UK FRC one, and that works very well, but it sort of works really well because it's a group of people who know each other very well, and they have shared background, shared understanding of the sorts of research that they're interested in. And I do sometimes wonder how easy it would be to replicate the sort of discussions you get in that group in a group with people coming from a diversity of backgrounds. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, how would we choose people to be part of that group, and how would we make them gel?
Well, why would that be any different sort of a challenge to any other group you might set up on an international as opposed to a single jurisdictional basis?
Like this, okay.
Like this.
Yeah. I suppose because I think it's partly because the groups we'd have to set the objective of what we want the group to do very clearly, and then the group, then perhaps it wouldn't be any different. You're right. I mean, it shouldn't be, but it is something that worries me a bit.
So when you say, are you talking about like the symposium type?
I'm talking about, say, an academic advisory group.
Group.
So, because Linda, you have one, and Chris, you have one. You have one.
Yeah. So I think, one way of dealing with that in your environment is to go very large, right, and have a lot of participation from a lot of different countries. I guess that's why I was recommending that instead of doing that, you keep it small, but then have it be more top-oriented as to who you're going to bring in. So, for example, if you're talking about intangible assets, if that's the topic that, or goodwill or whatever it might be, then go to this group and say, can you identify one or two academics that are really at the top of the research in that area, and then bring those folks in, as opposed to, I'm not sure having it be one group for every topic is necessarily going to be successful. And I would say that even in our much more uniform domain, I feel the lack of us not having that outreach to subject-specific experts, because academics, like anybody else, tend to be, they tend to be very narrow in their focus, and they've really become experts in a particular field or in a particular question or area within accounting research. They're not, broad.
So I think we have not mentioned, but I think we should, that the fact that at IFES we have carried out discussions on this topic, and the idea of an academic network of some sort, or research projects network, has been mentioned a number of times, if my memory is correct. So I think that maybe there would be merit in trying to coordinate. I think the efforts, what we are doing today, could be formalized to start with and done on a regular basis. We have people in charge of accounting research or academic liaison in our respective organizations, in most of our respective organizations. So I think we could create a network on that basis and exchange information because it's extremely helpful. So to have some sort of a network plus database type would be, I think, a good plus with links.
Yeah.
So and what I'd suggest is if you're setting that up, you determine on what basis you want to choose your members. And certainly in Australia, the way we chose our members was based on geographical spread and making sure that those were the people who had links into as many of the universities and researchers as possible. Because what you're wanting them to do is actually bring to you the research that's important, or at least the people who are researching in the area of your interest. So it's really the contact level, I think, is what you're looking at as your key factors about who you want sitting around that table.
Is this the accounting research network on the picture?
Yeah, I have emailed them.
Mary?
So sorry, I'm stunned by Patrick's pointing out the network. As I've listened to different ways that people consult their academic liaison networks where they have them, I see a number of different possible purposes, and I just maybe wanted to get a little bit more feedback about which people think has been more successful, more useful to the standard setter, and which may be less so. I mean, Chris, you just talked right now about using the network to identify research that is relevant to the standard setter, so that's kind of another way of monitoring ongoing research and flagging up things to the standard setter that is useful. Other ideas I've heard in the context of evidence-based standard setting are with problem definition. You know, Tommaso, you mentioned impact assessment as one thing. As well as the identifying what most relevant research is. And then there's a question of, is it reactive to, you know, you call or consult them, you know, maybe doesn't need a physical meeting, as there's something on which you want to, you know, an academic input. The alternative is to have kind of a standing group that meets from time to time where there's an update to them, and then they may give feedback from an academic perspective, either in terms of, I can't remember who said this before, kind of testing the rigor of the problem definition that's been done, maybe thinking about research that could or should be done, and maybe distinguishing between nice to have and need to have. So with those seem like very different purposes, and then I contrast it with Patrick just mentioned, which is really the notion of a network, you know, bringing together as a network those charged with research responsibilities within national or regional standard setters, which is kind of another networking of people we talk to. I don't know if anybody has any strong reactions. I worry a bit that, you know, Chris, you seem to have been successful at getting people to do things on an advisory basis that normally, you know, they might say, well, this is my day job. Do you want to buy my product, buy my services? In terms of monitoring research, but I can see that being tremendous help for a board in terms of awareness of research, and you seem to have overcome that hurdle. But do people have input or experience that we should think about on which of those functions is an academic liaison group most effective at, and whether it's you go to them on an as-needed basis, or whether there's value in having kind of a standing meet from time to time, update across a broad range of topics, and see what you get back. They're very different designs of a liaison committee.
Yeah. So to that point, the academic resource group that we've had for a couple of years, it predated me. It's probably 3 years old now. And my understanding is that it was brought about because the efforts to have somebody in the fellow position weren't consistently resulting in us having someone in on staff, basically. So while there was a preference to have someone full-time on staff, because there were not enough applicants, sometimes no applicants for that position, sometimes only one. We had years where we had nobody. We had years where we didn't necessarily have the best fit. Some years it was great.
Yeah.
So it was very spotty. And so the decision was made that we're not going to continue to pursue that approach because it wasn't working out. And instead, we would have the ARG, and the notion at the time was that they would be a resource for the staff because the staff was losing that person that was kind of there all the time. In order for that for those relationships to be built, we decided that we would have that group come to the board twice a year, and we would have meetings with those individuals, some board members, but also staff members. I don't personally think it's been all that effective in building those relationships with the staff. I don't know of any staff member that would have just picked up the phone and called an ARG member to ask a question. So I don't feel that there's really a good substitute externally to having someone internal there day in, day out, available to just have those conversations in the hallway, know that they're just down there waiting to help if there's a question that comes up. And so I'm hoping that this postdoc approach will fill that, what I think is a very big need, because I think our ARG is better than nothing, but it is not in any way, shape, or form a substitute for the thing that it was intended to substitute for.
It's hard to staff a staff position with a committee.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So if we are successful with the postdoc program, then I'm hoping it will morph more into an advisory group that can help us identify experts and help us identify research. But we'll also have that person on staff doing that too. So we'll have to wait and see how all that plays out.
Andreas?
I would echo everything that Christine just said, but would add one piece that Chris alluded to when she spoke about geographical dispersion. I'd go a step further and say you probably ought to look into cultural dispersion and potentially even different languages.
Yeah.
Because it depends a bit on what type of research you're after. The majority of empirical research that I'm aware of is largely carried out on American data, because there you do have the large numbers. That is not to say the American environment is not important, but I think if depending on what you want to analyze, the question is, can you just analogize to any other jurisdiction? And I would have some doubts for certain topics. So you probably need to reach out further, and that is why it may well be that a standing group might not fit you as it does for national standard setters, because there, as all the other colleagues have said, we share the same beliefs, we share the same tradition, we come from the same background, we know each other. That's far easier, and even then, I think there are challenges in actually saying to academics here, this is in for you. And we have tried that at the German Standard Set, and you will have noticed I have not put my name tag up before. Generally, there were significant doubts as to what such a group could contribute. And we have basically chosen the Italian route as well. So we do have academics on our technical committees, and we have them in our working groups. And every so often they share the working groups. It depends a bit on the subject. So if it is a normative project, like something on the conceptual framework, this seems to be prime territory for academics. Mind you shouldn't be letting them wandering off, but anyway.
Watch out. To your left.
But,
would you repeat that?
But whenever it comes to empirical research, I think the question is, what is it that you're looking after? Is it methodology? There, I think it would help. And the group could help, and maybe even on a constant basis, like advising people how to set up a questionnaire, how to build a certain event, how to approach and structure a project, something like that. But that is more the methodological part. Mm-hmm. If it comes to content, I think the timing issue that Yukio mentioned is very prevalent, especially if you think about robust empirical evidence. That probably even surpasses your PIR timeline. So it is challenging, I suppose.
Okay. Oh, Christina.
Yeah, I can understand the staff's concern. In Hong Kong, our experience is, like what Andrea said, you need to really, you know, watch what they're doing and make sure they don't wander off. And the language is also a little different. Just to share our experience, we do have academics advising us. We also have them on our board. the way we select the academics, actually it's 2 years ago when the ISB held its research forum in Hong Kong, I identified a few of them who can actually, you know, talk to us in a more layman way and understand the purpose of standard setting and what we're trying to achieve. So I think in your papers you are proposing that you would, you know, observe or participate in more conferences, so perhaps you might want to think about, you know, identifying you know, academics who can be helpful to you, and I think you would know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you very much. That's really useful. Thank you.